someone who's been front and center in the big changes around South Africa and one of the most important influences of events in South African politics since his very early days in the Eastern Cape has been Bantu Holomisa. And I was pleased and privileged to have him in the studio this year so we could talk about 20 years of the UDM and many other things, including the current state of affairs in the ANC. He was, of course, one of the first people to have left the ANC, even though he was pushed out and didn't leave voluntarily. He has very little time for people who are still sticking around in an ANC, he says, is losing power and deserves to. He also said in the interview, "We might not be in power, but we possess power." Of course, Bantu Holomisa has a very interesting history. He was very close to Nelson Mandela, presided over his funeral inter alia, and called the Guptas a wake-up call in our discussion we had just a few weeks ago. He arrived with no entourage, no fanfare, no bells and whistles, and he remains one of our most favored and cherished politicians. Here is Bantu Holomisa.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Major General Bantu Wonke Harrington Holomisa. Sir, it is a pleasure to welcome you to our studio.
Thank you. It's nice to be back here.
And it's always good to talk to you because you're one of the most honest and outspoken leaders in South Africa. It seems to me, and I was talking to Justice Malala about this yesterday, everyone, when you ask them, who did you vote for, they all go UDM.
Mm.
But the numbers don't show that they're all voting UDM. They all love you and respect you. For some reason, when it comes to the ballot box.
Well, of course, you can't blame them. The elections of South Africa are very expensive. And if you don't have money to cover the whole country, so your numbers will always not show the right figures. But hopefully that thing is changing because 2014 elections, I think DA and UDM, according to IEC results, were the ones which showed upward mobility while the rest was pointing south except the EFF, which was new. So, and also last year in local government, the voters gave us power as opposition to run big metros. So I hope by 2019, the voters will reward once more the opposition parties for the role they have played to make sure that the checks and balances are implemented as we have done, either in courts or marching or whatever.
But General, it is interesting that there are so many people in this country who, even if they are stalwarts of the ANC or perhaps members of the very vocal opposition, that they have a lot of respect for you. It seemed to me that during a lot of the upheavals and the complaints and this whole situation around state capture and even the motion of no confidence that was tabled not so long ago, that many people in this country look to you. You seem to combine for me a lot of factors that I think a lot of people are moved by. First of all, that you have always been a man of your word. There's a there's a huge amount of integrity there, which is something that's very difficult to have in politics. They can see that. I can see that. I think there are a lot of people who also respect the fact that you come from a traditional background, that you understand your language and culture, that there is an element of the Xhosa aristocracy there, which is which has carried that culture forward in a tremendously powerful way. And then that you are a man of, you know, you've got an understanding of our politics. You were there, you were very seriously outspoken during the time before the Democratic Revolution here. Since then, you've had a lot to do with how that's been incorporated into society. And I think people have a genuine admiration for the fact that you've never got your hands dirty.
Yeah, well, thank you for the compliments. And it's been a long road. But thanks God, one is still occupying the crease. And I can still hit some fours and sixes.
That's for sure.
And by look of things, the role we have played in the UDM is beginning to pay dividends because in 1995-96, when I left the ANC, the word corruption, mentioning the word corruption was like it was a taboo. Hence I was shown the door by making a reference to a historical event in Transkei. And today, even the main suspects, they are claiming that they are fighting corruption. So I'm celebrating, really, because there's a lot of vindication of what I had said before.
And that was a very, very big move at the time. I mean, since then, Mosiwa Lekota and Mbazi Mashiloa and many other people have left the ANC very publicly. You know, recently Makosi Kwaza has at least removed herself from her branch, and she said that she can't be part of the way that it's moving now. But your move was, at that stage, unprecedented, and you were almost like the canary in the coal mine. You know, before anyone else had spoken of these things, you had made it abundantly clear how you felt. And as a man of principle, you were not going to be part of it anymore.
Yeah, well, of course, they took me by surprise. I never expected that from them. After I went to the TRC to just mention, make a reference to a historical event, and justifying that those people who died in the abortive coup must be compensated. But they didn't take it kindly, and... But also, they were actually reflecting to me who they were. I didn't know them. And I said, no, you go jump. I'm not going to apologize. I will withdraw my testimony. And here we are. I mean, I'm celebrating now. I'm laughing and say, yeah, I told you so. Look at them. And the climate, of course, was not conducive to start a political party at that time. The environment was hostile. We lost a lot of members being killed by the ANC followers. They were locked out of public places, blocked on SABC. But we shouldered on.
And, General, did it hurt you to see what the Eastern Cape has become now? Because while it is a battleground and it's still contested in a very...
Unfortunately, there's no... I wouldn't mind about politics differences of among the ANC members in Eastern Cape or attending their festival of chairs or whatever. But the service delivery is horrific. It's appalling.
And every time I go to the Eastern Cape, I meet good people who have been let down. And I meet people who are just disappointed and they feel hopeless about the situation when it comes to public service, to delivery, to all of these things. I know that you have an enormous influence in that province and that you and your party continue to attract a lot of votes and a lot of support. And in this metro coalition in Nelson Mandela Bay, you're making progress. I understand that. But do you feel that we'll ever get to a point where we can resuscitate the Eastern Cape's economy, create jobs for people there, stop the migration out? It's such an important part of our country. And as a man who used to be in the ANC, this is also the birthplace of the movement in so many ways.
That's true, but as long as we don't have a clear rural policy, development policy, you see, when you travel in countries like Germany in their outlying areas, you will find that there is no land which is lying fallow. They produce food or feed for animals, and then they plant trees so that they can use those trees during winter, community forests, and then you will see a house and roads. That's all. No land which is lying fallow. When you look at our rural development, there's no policy. ANC doesn't know exactly. To bring electricity to every corner, it doesn't mean you have improved the rural development. Rural development, rural areas of South Africa should be producing food. And
especially fertile places like the Eastern Cape.
Eastern Cape along the coast, that's a maize belt. We should be exporting millets from South Africa, from what we get from there. In actual fact, I think Sebe and Matanzimas, ANC will struggle even to reach that standard of administration.
And that's saying something, because you used to be very critical of the old
Yes, if you look at the administration, No, ANC government. I'm talking national, not even provinces. They will never match the standard of Matanza. They must forget. Because K.D. Matanzima appointed people on merit as DGs, as chief directors, the civil servants, it was a career civil servants service, and not what you see now. A person will be taken from the street, go and make him an educational planner, go and make him a chief director. A person who has not even, who has never done even an induction. So they that's why things are collapsing. You look at the maintenance of the old infrastructure, which we inherited from National Party and from the homelands. It's collapsing in a number of areas, and it's going to be more expensive to maintain it because the ANC government is very poor when it comes to maintaining of the infrastructure, whether it's a government building or it's roads.
Well, you had a huge role to play in the transition of the Transkei, and its very smooth transition into South Africa, and how the government there started to include elements of what the Transkei government had discovered. I mean, at that point, you really can say it was one of the best administered places.
Yes, fortunately, when we took over Transkei from Stella Sigcau in 1987, we established ties with the liberation movements. I remember in early 88, we sent a delegation to meet ANC in Zambia, and then we sent a delegation to meet PAC in Tanzania. And then we sent, I think, Chief Kangomhlaba Matanzima to meet Madiba. We tell them that the message was clear, there's a change of government here, and we are not going to speak the politics of union buildings, but neither are we going to use Transkei as a springboard to attack South Africa, but people will be free to do their things peacefully. And we never looked back, and that has helped us because we were ahead of thinking as compared to other homelands. And, hence, and there was a resistance and bloodshed in other homelands.
And that was also a very strong statement to make in terms of the people of the Transkei and their own sovereignty and their own desire to have a say in their future.
Oh, yes.
Which was probably unheard of up to that point in terms especially, of that old government.
Especially when it's there facilitated by a military dictatorship.
Well, there are benign and there are malign dictatorships. But General, I'm curious, Stella Sigcau ended up becoming premier later on of the Eastern Cape.
No.
Was she not? Or was she made a minister?
No, she was a minister.
Okay. Now, when we look at, because we've got to move out of the Eastern Cape, there's so much to talk about when it comes to the UDM. The UDM may not be a party that commands enormous numbers, but your influence is enormous. It seems to me that you're able to apply yourselves as a party, and you in particular as the leader of that party, to make a very big difference in opposition politics and in order to bring the governing party to the table when you need to, because even begrudgingly sometimes they have to admit that you make a good point. Do you think that they find it irritating that they occasionally have to concede to things that you have called them out on?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think the ANC in particular is seeing UDM as a hostile opponent. When Mandela said I must come back to the ANC, I said no. But when it comes to issues of national interest, we will support you, the ANC. I guess it was for that reason that they approached us to vote with them in KwaZulu-Natal in 2004, when they ascended to power there. And also when Zuma had problems with the soldiers, you remember, in 2009 at Union Buildings. So he told the cabinet that there's only one person who can stop this. Go and talk to Bantu. Lindiwe Sisulu that evening called me and said, man, please, we need your skills. So we assembled about 10 people, and ever since then, there's never been a problem. And I'm still serving in that commission as a deputy chair, but I told them that I serve only for free. I don't want compensation. Don't want to be compromised. And so, yes, you are correct to say we have influence there, here and there. We might not be in power, but we do possess power.
Mm. Well, sometimes you become the kingmaker in a situation where there's a split vote. And it's also, I think, extremely poignant to most South Africans that you were the man called upon to oversee Madiba's funeral and to have such a role in our saying goodbye to him as the leader of this country. I think a lot of people realized that it was quite extraordinary that a leader from another party, obviously there are, you know, you had ties to Madiba in a number of other ways. So it wasn't politics. Mm. But that you took such an important role there, I think for many people was symbolic.
Well, it was an honor to serve Madiba, and also that even when I had left the ANC, when he said 8 days after I had left the ANC, said that the issue of Bantu and Sarafina too was not properly handled. So I was challenging him, the ANC, in court. So when he said that, I went to see him in his house in Kuno. I said, "Oh, you are conceding that you are wrong." "Yes, Bantu, but the leadership is still angry." And then I said, "Oh, you are part of the leadership. You want to tell me that you are angry still? Yet yesterday you were saying the issue of Bantu was not properly handled." So I said to him, "No, I'm here to ask, to tell you that that court case I was challenging my expulsion, I'm withdrawing it. I've accepted that you guys have expelled me. So let the bygones be the bygones. We must continue eating our stamps, the staple food, mngosho and lamb and meat and so on." Well, Madiba, I relieved him. From there onwards, we continued. And he would task me to do the work at his house. If he's got a function, "Bantu, you must be a program director. His birthday, Bantu, program director." If Zuma or Mpegi is coming there, and NEC, "Bantu, where are you?" "No, Daddy, I'm in Pretoria." "Please come and see me." Sit down. "Tomorrow, Comrade Mpegi and Amalala," so we called
him. Amalala's Jacob Zuma.
"Yes, they are coming here with the NEC to wish me well for my birthday. I want you to arrive here early and welcome the president. Show him this is his chair, Deputy President Zuma, his chair, and the rest of the NEC. You take them to the marquee tent outside." Mm-hmm. I said, then I would joke sometimes. I said, I'm the opposition, from the opposite. "Nonsense." "By the way, you are a united party. I'm a united democratic movement." "Whatever, man."
He didn't recognize me. It must be interesting to you, having known so many of these people who we regard now as being the founding families, the founding fathers, in very many cases, the founding mothers and sisters of democratic South Africa. You know, these are people who you had known for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Some of them you grew up with. Some of them you campaigned alongside in the ANC. Some of them you've argued with very ardently in Parliament and everywhere else. I mean, when you were campaigning in those early days of the ANC alongside Madiba and Thabo Mbeki and Cyril and Mamwini and all of these people, there's no way you could forecast the story as it would unfold. But are you pleased that you've almost remained an individual where a lot of these people have gone in a direction that perhaps you wouldn't have gone?
Well, I think one thing which, in hindsight, which I one is proud of, with all this conflict with ANC then, which I had, looking back, I said, no, thanks God, I got liberty. Because I cannot wait for Mandashe or Zizikota to speak on my behalf. Now I can tweet freely, I can place thing on Facebook, issue a statement, and I know there are people who are going to listen out there. So it's not about power running a government, but I'm free to advise and free to attack. I'm free to criticize. If I was in the ANC, maybe I would have been caught up in one of these scandals, directly or indirectly. State capture and so on, you know?
How do you like social media? I mean, do you enjoy the fact that you can communicate directly with so many people?
I enjoy it, and I don't, and I've never appointed somebody to administer it, because it's not personal when you somebody is running your...
And I think people can tell.
...your account. So you are able to engage people, and some are critical, and then you patient, you educate him. No, this is the reason, or educate her. At the end of the day, those people come back and said, no, I was wrong, we were right, General.
Well, it's experience, and nothing replaces that. And I suppose that's also where it helped to have come from the family that you came from, that at an early age you had a public duty and you had a private person, and you were able to distinguish those roles.
Well, of course, the early education I received at Jongilizwe College School for Sons of Chiefs helped us, some of us, very, very well. In that college, when you left matric, I had two certificates. One for ordinary standard 10, and the other diploma on leadership. The subjects which we used to be taught at that college then included, amongst others, the conduct of public affairs, current affairs, African law, which a university prescribed book written by Sima, which deals with the different cultures in Africa, and also the conduct of public affairs taught us to be sensitive to the people you lead. In other words, you put people.
It's like it was like a leadership school.
Yeah, yes, it was. You put people. You are taught to always be of service to the people.
General, we need this school back. Yeah. Don't you think many of our leaders could do very well to have gone to the school?
Or those subjects would be put to all high schools.
Yes. Yeah. I think there's value in it. It seems to me that there's probably more value in learning public service, for example, than in learning geography.
I mean, the planning cycle, one's planning cycle, you are taught there at school. Say, all right, you mark your bed. You clean your room and get outside, check in your hostel if there are papers or lying around. So the culture of ownership, we got it from early stages in our lives. This is where I think we need to inculcate that the culture of ownership, not only to the students now, but to everybody. Because people would board a combi, go to town, buy a piece of meat or Kentucky, and after that they finish eating their food and they throw on the street. And as a result, South Africa is one of the dirtiest countries.
Yeah, and it all comes down to this personal accountability.
Yeah.
You know, if we're going to have dignity and we expect to be treated with dignity, all of us, because I've seen people in very fancy cars throwing things out of the window. It's got nothing to do with how much you have. Then you must treat yourself with the respect to keep you know, what you have in order.
There are certain do's and don'ts as a citizen, which you must observe.
But I also recognize in you something that I see in men who have done military service. And that is a sense of self-discipline, which may have not been there before military service, but most young men who go through that.
It has helped us.
Yeah.
I would be rubbish somewhere.
I don't think so, but your point is well.
No, but Jongolizo College, and also after leaving Jongolizo College, went to the military, and in the military, well, of course, as you know, military is about management. Mm. You are taught management every day, whether you are a troopie, you are a corporal, but it's about management and how do you save lives at the end of the day.
Well, your skills in leadership have taken you everywhere. The United Nations, mm-hmm. you've spoken to the Security Council.
Yes.
You've spoken to a number of councils on foreign relations, African American Institute, the United States. You've addressed people from all over the world. Mm. Do you feel when you are in South Africa that we have a public mm-hmm. who are sufficiently politically educated?
Yes, thanks to radio talk shows. They have done a lot of work since 1994. Freeing the airwaves have helped. When people are angry, they would pick up phone and vent their anger over the radio, or you call a minister to come and answer. That on its own has helped to educate people. If, for instance, we go to a constitutional court for a specific reason, the public wants to know. Call Olumisa to the studio or call Malema. He must come and explain. So the citizens of this country are politically aware. And why they are politically aware is because the freedom we gain under Madiba, everybody was aware where we are heading to. But all of a sudden, they also noticed that there have been some rogue elements who have hijacked this democratic project. Even our constitution, when we drew it, we never thought one day we would have a rogue element at union buildings. Mm. We thought we would always have a person like Mandela as a president. And now people are saying, no, we need to review Electoral Act and put some accountability, or that the powers of a president are too much. He seems to be controlling everybody. He's appointing NPA heads and so on. So South Africans are politically aware of all nationalities, which is positive. Well, but what we also notice now is that is the emergence of the civil society. Civil society after 1994, they had a lull. You remember the Bishop Tutus and many others mm-hmm. before apartheid was removed. They were active. Said, "Oh, Madiba is the president," and then everybody relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
But now they can see that no, man. The struggle has been hijacked, and they are coming back again, making noises. But I hope this time around they will make noises which may necessitate to change certain rules in parliament, appointment of ministers. How I wish that the ethics committee in parliament can be strengthened so that any political party which has won election must first of all parade whoever is going to be in the cabinet to that ethics committee to be screened and cleared by the committee and the public, and then so that you don't have rogue elements as ministers.
We seem to do that with judges.
Yes, we need it. We need something like that.
You need almost like a judicial services commission for the executive.
Yes, that is needed.
I heard something. I'm pleased you brought up the civil society. That's where I was going with my question about political education, because you have found yourself being thrown in with people you might not have expected to be thrown in with because you happen to be on the same side of a civil society argument. Do you feel that the people of this country are able to take control of some of these institutions, or at least to force a change in some of the institutions where change is so desperately needed. Because when you were in CODESA with everybody else right in the beginning, and you guys came up with the constitution and you crafted this incredible document, you couldn't have foreseen everything.
No.
So there were safeguards, there were Chapter 11 institutions, there were all kinds of things that we thought would be impervious to corruption and that could not be captured.
Yeah, yes.
There's no way you could have foreseen an immigrant family coming in here and buying the president.
In fact, we must be thankful to JZ by putting his son with those fellows, the Guptas. Otherwise, we would have ended up inheriting an empty shell, because they move in quietly, quickly, and cause a lot of damage. Every institution, they targeted people. But if Zuma's son was not there, we would have not maybe pay attention. That's why I'm saying, thanks to Zuma's proximity through his son to the Guptas. But it's a wake-up call, and whoever is going to be the prime minister or president, rather, after 2019 elections, that executive has got a mammoth task to recapture the lost ground. We've lost a lot of acres and acres of ground. International reputation, the dignity of South Africa, the international ratings. We need to go back to where we used to be and respect it.
Do you think, General, we can recoup that lost ground? I mean, we've had so many good people in government since 1994, but we've also had some bad ones. And those bad ones have established networks of patronage. And to dismantle that is a complicated business.
That's why now they you can see their hand already as to who they want to be the next president.
You said something interesting about this the other day. I have to bring this up because everybody's talking about Zweli Mkhize because you brought it up. He is gaining ground. He was in here not so long ago. I had a very lovely chat to him. He didn't appear to me to be overly ambitious, which in the ANC they like. They like someone who's not ambitious. The front runners, you know, Nkosi Sanat Dlamini Zuma and Cyril Ramaphosa, and this situation in KwaZulu-Natal seems to be pointing towards a positive move on Zweli Mkhize's part. You said in the press the other day, he's the real Zuma candidate.
Yeah.
That Nkosi Sanat Dlamini Zuma is just a distraction.
That's a decoy.
Why do you say that?
Well. I've been to a number of meet functions and where the two have been together, and I always ask myself, all right, why is this one here? This is a state function. Why Msholozi would say,
Treasurer General of the ANC,
please tell the program director to introduce this one. I said, okay. And also, I've also noticed that when he visit abroad, Mkhize would always be there next to the president. I'm sure he's being introduced to the heads of government. Why would you not travel with other people? It cannot always be for fundraising, because it's a government trip. And those things are, you can't say, bring your party treasurer to embarrass the president. Hey, these guys are looking for money. No. So, and also, Zweli Mkhize is also respected by the chiefs, KwaZulu-Natal, the king, and many people. Zuma's wife. President Zuma, he never mentioned to say he's supporting Nkosazana. That was a project of Bathabile Dlamini, the women. And Zuma said, yes, I don't have a problem, a woman taking over. It could have been another woman. But I know that this blue-eyed boy is is silly.
Hmm.
So you watch the space. But Cyril Ramaphosa, Nkosazana Zuma, Lindiwe Sisulu, Zweli, all the four of them, they are strong characters. But the question would be asked as to why were they quiet for almost 10 years, Zuma causing havoc, and to the extent of going to parliament and tell the caucus, no, protect Zuma, to say Zuma is not going to pay money for Nkandla. And then Zuma just left them on the ground and say, I'm paying. So we can't exonerate Cyril, Lindiwe Sisulu, Zweli Mkhize, and Nkosazana.
Balekambete,
that five. They are as guilty as Zuma because they put the interest of the party and their leader ahead of the country. So, no. But as far as the ANC is concerned, I think Zuma's candidate is Zweli. Hmm. That's their own baby, but when we talk national politics, we don't have respect for them.
Now, that's interesting because if you are in opposition, you must have a preferred candidate
mm-hmm.
to fight with in the next election.
Not a personal, I don't have worries.
You don't mind
about
who it is?
I don't care about who is among those five.
Do you think no matter who of the five it is, the ANC will continue to lose ground?
Yes, there's no doubt about that.
And this message of unity that Zweli Mkhize is trying to put out there now, that he's the candidate for unity, he's got Didi Mabuza busy backing him.
No, those are politics of factions. Those are factional politics, because if he's a disciplined cadre of the ANC, if I was still in the ANC, I would have asked him and says, but why are you challenging Deputy President? Because the police here has been the next deputy will take over from, and he has been groomed as such. What is it? Why are you? Who are you representing? I would have asked him that.
You're in such an interesting position because I would imagine that people like Cyril Ramaphosa will pick up the phone and call you. Someone like Zweli Mkhize might call you up one day because they know that you're not hostile. And they know you're not interested in the factionalism because you have no dog in the fight.
No.
So you almost can be objective, and maybe they would even ask your advice. Would that happen?
No, I don't. I'm not looking forward to that.
But it might still.
Well, if they talk about South Africa.
Yes.
Anytime. Like I said to Matiba. Jay said, I told him the same. Peggy called me to assist them in KwaZulu-Natal. It was fine.
But
not advising them about their issues within ANC. No,
ANC is a part of your past.
No, I'm not interested in that. Yeah.
Why is it so hard for other people to do what you did in leaving the ANC? You know, you see people who've really been slighted very badly.
I must remember. You must remember, Pravin Gordhan. Didn't leave ANC.
They expelled you.
I was expelled. So.
But you made peace with that.
Oh, yes. I mean, 8 days after I left.
So it's not. It shouldn't be that hard if they have. Why don't people like, Xolisi Jonas, Xabisi Jonas? Sorry. Mm. Why does Xabisi Jonas not come and say to you at the UDM, I can maybe help you here. Maybe we can help each other. Maybe I'll bring some people with me. It would seem so obvious to some of us.
No. You are talking about, ANC members are like followers of pirates and Kaiser Chiefs. if you can beat pirates and do whatever, they will not go to the ground, but they will never go and join Kaiser Chiefs.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Unless they're expelled.
Vice versa, yes.
The question around then, let's turn to the UDM. What do you think the future for the UDM, especially with regard to the upcoming 2019 elections, which we're all, I think, interested in because it may be the first real contestation since 94?
Well, the UDM stands a good chance this time around, and I think patience is beginning to pay. We waited for the right moment. You know, since 1997, we have never spent a cent in hiring experts or marketers and so on. But this time around, we have saved money. We said, all right, let's try this because other political parties are doing this. They've got consultants and so on. Even when we go to the elections, you'll find that ANC, for instance, would go and hire companies from USA to run their elections. So we will do that this time around. We begin to do that in a small way. At the same time, we are emphasizing on parading the young leaders in our list of 2014. You see the leader of Eastern Cape currently is a young fellow. He's got MBA qualifications. Then you have Kwangwa, who is the deputy president. He's a chief whip. He's got masters. So I'm trying to groom as many and recruit as many within the UDM, those who have graduated, so that you build confidence in them. When they stand there, they can feel that, yeah, they have arrived. I was impressed during the celebrations of our 20th anniversary 2 weeks ago when I listened to these young fellows taking podium and conveying messages without reading a paper. I said, yeah, this is what I want to see.
People of conscience and people with good ideas.
And I drill to them that the UDM is about integrity, dignity, and prosperity. If you stick to those three pillars of the UDM, you will go places in the world.
General, you've also, unlike a lot of politicians, you have been married to your wife since 1981.
Mm-hmm.
And you have stayed married to your wife since 1981.
And if she were to say, I want a divorce tomorrow, I would kneel and say, please. That is the process. I am not prepared to go through. I've witnessed these things in papers and read about them. They are, no ways.
Is that, do you credit that to the two of you as individuals? And a marriage takes work. Do you credit it to the way you were both brought up? Do you credit it to your children?
The way we were brought up, because she's a daughter of a reverend, leader of Moravian Church in Mount Fletcher. And I grew up in a family where the person in that house was a preacher. And also I worked closely with late Reverend Bacon, who was the head of our Anglican Church in Mkanduli then. So there were... I was taught at that early stage about the do's and don'ts. So I was one of the fortunate kids to go through that and then go to Jongleizwe College, which was strictly run along disciplinary lines, and then went to military.
So there is merit in discipline by the sounds of things, whether it's religious, scholarly, or military.
Yeah.
When it comes to how you see things going now, there's the civil society movement. You've got the opposition who are cooperating where necessary. I did find it interesting that your party and the EFF opposed that failed DEA motion to dissolve Parliament, which was never going to succeed and would have probably caused more trouble than good. That was also a very opportunistic move, which I think you looked again at the country rather than party politics.
Yeah, well, of course, they didn't lobby us. It was just a unilateral decision. They like to do that. And we said, the Constitutional Court has just ruled that the IEC must upgrade the voters' roll with addresses and so on. And IEC, around that period, was saying we're looking for 300 million to finish or implement the decision of the Constitutional Court so that by March, April next year, the voters' roll is clean and then the results of the elections are credible.
Which and is hugely important. Yeah. You went to the Constitutional Court to make sure that was done.
And it was not brought by us. I think it was brought by another party. But all I'm saying is that we were not ready to have national elections because IEC was saying, I have got this albatross around my neck, which the Constitutional Court has thrown in me, to make sure that the next elections are credible.
And you wanted to make sure that they had the power to do that.
I didn't argue much with DA. I said along those principles.
But you have cooperated with them. You've cooperated with the EFF. There are things that you've done in order to...
We the relationship there is intact. Right now we are organizing a meeting to meet IEC. I'm coordinating that with as leaders of political parties for them to brief us what are their plans for 2019. And then we want to raise certain concerns with them so that they can address them now. And during the time we assembled the coalition government, the UDM also coordinated a lot of meetings. And so at that level, I'm happy with the cooperation I'm getting from the parties with big numbers. So they respect what I'm doing.
Mm.
Because it's not about UDM or themselves, but it's about what the country needs.
And do you find that these coalition governments have a positive foreseeable future? Because a lot of people are very skeptical about whether or not they will survive.
Coalitions are here to stay. They have been here before. Zille would have not run Cape Town if there was no coalition. And she was rewarded, and then she even won a province. She's running a province today. So if we do well in Johannesburg, Port Elizabeth, Pretoria, or Tshwane, people now are already saying we want coalition at national level.
Hmm.
But the glitches which are happening currently are helping us to make sure that we make things tighter for national level coalitions.
Because the ANC would have us believe that all of these coalitions are fraught with conflict.
No,
that there is no cooperation.
No, don't worry about that. They are the ones... They are the ones who will be leading after 2019, wanting to form coalitions. So this arrogance of theirs, in fact, they started last year. Remember, they came to us. I said, no, I don't have keys. I think the keys are with Malema and EFF. Go there, but I'm not sure whether you will succeed because only yesterday you were squeezing the balls of the EFF in Parliament. So the coalition, the ANC, is likely that also in 2019 they are going to come and knock at the door of the other parties. And even DA.
Yeah,
they can go to DA because they have been having coalitions in other municipalities.
Mm. And maybe ideologically they're closer than we think.
In fact, that's where you will find that if they were to work together, then you would quickly address these negative issues around racism. You would improve race relations. Because when they talk in Parliament, yeah, you whites, you this and that. And as I said, this language cannot be said by the party which is regarded as a mother of non-racialism in South Africa. After all, they are in bed with National Party.
Mm.
National Party members are in the ANC.
Mm.
But DA doesn't, it doesn't appear to be rebutting this. They just accept it to be attacked by ANC.
Well, I mean, they've also got an identity crisis, I think, the DA.
But it's unfortunate because we have to credit Zille. She tried to transform that party, and today my man has done a good job.
Mm.
He brought nationalities from other areas, townships, for the DA, and those people. Yesterday they were ANC, and the ANC taught them that we work in the ANC with whites, coloureds, and Indians.
So do you think our country is in a position? Because also, if you go onto social media, you get the impression that we're very divided.
Oh yes.
That most people don't want to get along. On the streets, it's a different story.
Mm.
Most people seem very cooperative in real life, and I think South Africans have a capacity for forgiveness, particularly black South Africans, like very few people in the world.
Mm.
And it seems like we almost might be backtracking a little bit in terms of our race relations. Yeah, Do you get that feeling?
Yeah, yes. We have done so. And unfortunately, the campaign was led by Zuma in justifying or defending the Guptas.
And this belt partinger.
And it turned out that this was a spin.
Mm.
Drafted by Pottinger and his crew, and their crew, and also planting this to the youth of the ANC. Those are future leaders.
Mm.
But it has been a learning curve for them, and it might cost them also during the elections, because South Africans, I don't think they are game to be harping on issues of race. They want food on their table, better education, improved infrastructure, and so on.
So we can overcome this?
Ah, no, it is. Let's have another leader in the ANC within 2 years, and then within a year, and then they must stick to their policy. It's them who taught South Africans about non-racialism. Why do they abandon in midstream now? Because they wanted to protect a thief. No.
So that thief. what should happen? Because already people are talking about what's next. They're talking about who the next leader of the ANC might be. But if you were president of the country, they're not impossible things.
Mm-hmm.
If you were president of the country, what would you see done? Shall we let this old man go and retire in Nkandla? Shall we let it all go and move on to something new? Or must we also seek some kind of redress? What's your feeling?
No, I think once Zuma step out of union buildings, people will forget about him. And a new government can just wind up his things to say, man, just go and answer your cases in court if there is a need to do so. But we are not going to send you, arrest you. Let the NPA and others wrap up your things. And then your fate will be decided by the courts. Then once the court says we are clearing you or we found you guilty, then it's only then that parliament and the government can say, hey man, is it worth arresting this person? But at least you would have proven to the people that everybody is equal before the law.
Which is important. What about the Guptas? What about that money?
No. The issue of the Guptas, I think that process is unfolding if you look at it. The civil society have taken them to courts and so on. Let us not interfere there.
Mm.
Let that one go. And if I were to be a president tomorrow, oh my God.
What would you do first?
I'm worried about the lawlessness which we are seeing in this country, a lack of discipline. and also the way our civil service, which you depend on them for service delivery, they are not trained, they are not professional. Those are the areas where at least you should draw a line. Say, guys, we are answerable to the population. So if you are working as a nurse, you are a policeman, you are a soldier, you are a traffic officer, these are the rules. You are the last ones, therefore I want to read about you misbehaving in the papers. Just one statement. Then they will know who they are dealing with. And then you go to the labor, business and government at NEDLAC, and say, I want these tensions which are here be a thing of the past. Here is a national development plan which we wasted millions in developing it. Are you satisfied that it is being implemented? If you are not satisfied, which paragraphs or chapters you are not happy with? Because this is not a policy, it's a vision. And then you ask each department, is your policy talking to this national vision? If people are saying, no, it's not working, come up with some suggestions. And then, obviously, the main issue now is to how do we open doors for the majority citizens who have been locked out of the economic mainstream. When Afrikaners were taking over reins from the English, they were poor. But the state intervened to empower them. Hence you have these strategic industries. 20 years, 25 years, not a one strategic industry ANC has come up with. No. Let alone building one city or a town. The towns they have inherited are instead becoming ghosts. So therefore the economy would have to be a centerpiece, but the economic development without the access to land is gonna be meaningless to the majority citizens. So we have to sit down therefore and say traditional leaders, the farmers, those who own land, the state land, what do you want to do about this land we have? First of all, it's the security tenure of individual. And secondly, those who are all lucky to be having farms, are they producing food? And also those Africans who have been given farms, do they have access to capital? It's a lot of work. It looks like we have not worked. Yet the money has been there, but corruption overtook or undermined everything. So it would be like if I were to be a president tomorrow, we have to start somewhere and say, from here, this is how we are going to run with the ball.
And this cabinet of 75 people...
No. Those things, that's a luxury we cannot afford. And these are politics of patronage. Those politics must be a thing of the past. That's why I'm saying if we want to do service delivery, professionalize your civil service. Pay them decent salaries and so on. And make sure that... they know the work. If you appoint a civil servant, at least the political appointments must only end up when you appoint a DG. From deputy downwards, those must be career civil servants. People who understand the field and who have got an institutional memory in each department. You can't appoint directors on contract and then after 3 months or 3 years, those people are gone. That's where they plot the corruption.
Or we find out that we've been paying for them on suspended leave forever.
Yeah. And nobody knows that they're always. Those are the target. Those are the the areas which would be prioritized, because we have billion or trillions of rands which must be spent to help the people.
Do you think that for a young black girl or boy in rural South Africa today, there is something to be optimistic about?
Yes, I think so. They mustn't give up. But of course, those boys of all nationalities, as you can see, they are frustrated now. They are staying at home with degrees, diplomas. Mm. Who is running the administration is Comrade, because he's got a relevant membership card, but no skill.
We have brilliant people in this country. I'm glad to say we can count you among the best of us. And I hope that we will. You know, it's a dream, but who knows? If there's a President Bantuholomiso one day, I will be at the front of the queue. General, thank you so much.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
It's always good to pick your brain. I hope that you will continue on with your journey here and with the UDM and strengthening our democracy from within and without. We can't do this without you.
No, thank you very much. We'll continue to bet on.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
This is CliffCentral.com.